2002. Vietnamese-Australian Van Thuong Nguyen is arrested for trafficking heroin into Singapore. The zero-tolerance Southeast Asian country sentences him to hang, and Van is held in Singapore's notorious Changi prison. Despite the efforts of the Australian government and friends and family of Van, the 25-year-old was executed in 2005. This is Van's story. Primary sources for this episode include SBS, The Guardian, The Canberra Times, The Herald Sun, The Daily Telegraph, Singapore Supreme Court, and The Age. Hi guys, sorry, welcome back to Unknown Passage, episode 84, mixing it up this week. So I'm really scared to record this because the Anchor app that I record this on has glitched twice in the last couple of days when I've been using it, and it has exited and crashed the thing. So if that happens, you'll probably hear me crying all the way from Australia to where you are. So I'm going to try to kind of just record this in segments so I don't lose a huge amount if that happens. So I'm bringing you another episode this week because I started researching this, even though I know it very well, because as we get into it, you'll see that I have a lot in common with this story, being an Australian and from Melbourne. But I decided to watch a series about Van, and ultimately I will talk about that in a minute. But basically what happened was I watched the whole thing, which is like 4 hours yesterday. And so I want to record it while it's fresh in my mind, because as much as the series wasn't exactly perfect, a bit of it was fictionalized. I have kind of done the research and cross-checked it against the actual truth. And I know a lot of you will probably have watched it. So I'm not going to have any travel stories this week. I'm just going to get straight into it because I kind of feel like this will be two parts, because I want to talk quite a lot about Singapore, the death penalty, and Changi Prison, where Van ultimately ended up. So I want to say thank you to patron Tegan, who requested Singapore as one of her options for her choosing a location request. Thank you so much, Tegan, because I had Van on my list on my tab for the Locked Up Abroad, mostly Australians, sadly. And I just hadn't gotten around to doing it. I know that I've done Kevin Barlow and Brian Chambers previously, and that was a really popular episode. This is not the same because one was in Malaysia, one was in Singapore, and their stories are very different. I think Van's story is a lot more, you'll feel a lot more sympathetic towards Van and why he did what he did. Not that I'm condoning it, than Kevin and Brian, but parts of it are similar, and we are talking about the death penalty again. So I want to say that this series that I watched, I was living overseas in England when this came out, so I had never heard of it. For Australians, or it's on Stan if you've got that. It's also uploaded to YouTube, so you can watch it anywhere in the world. It's 4 parts, which I did not know going into it. I thought it was one episode for 50 minutes. And then when we got to like the 45-minute mark, I was like, nothing's happened yet. And then I was like, oh, fuck, this is a series. So the series came out in 2013 and it was made by SBS and Screen Australia in association with Film Victoria, so all Australian companies, and it's called Better Man. So just search Better Man series on YouTube and I really recommend watching it. I started watching one episode and then I was up till 4 o'clock in the morning watching all 4. So it's 50-minute episodes, 4 of them, and it tells Van's story from basically through a lot of flashbacks through to what he did in Singapore. The cast was really good. It was compulsive viewing. I couldn't turn it off, even though I knew how it was going to end. It was one of those things where I hoped it would end differently. And they wheeled out people like Brian Brown, and who I've talked about in the Heath Ledger episode, and played a clip of his Bogan accent talking, David Wenham. And the guy who played Van was so good. So I will kind of reference that throughout it because I know a lot of you will have watched the series when it came out, especially Australians. And I want to kind of clarify what's true and what's not, because a lot of people probably walked away from watching the series thinking that it was all spot on. It does say at the start, characters and events, some of them have been fictionalized, because we don't exactly know what Van was thinking when he was on his own or anything like that. So they kind of had to fill that in, which I understand. The series did, as his family say, reopen old wounds. And one of their lawyers said that it was completely fictionalized. And I don't think that's really true. I just don't think they wanted one made of him, and that's fine. But a lot of it does cross-check, you know, with Van's story. And I think it was a very sympathetic view to Van, considering how many Australians really weren't fussed by what happened to Van, which if you're an Australian, you'll probably understand the number of Australians that traffic drugs overseas. It was out of control for a time. Happens all the time. A guy just got arrested in China. He's on death row for it. Australians seem to do it all the time. And it's something that Australians really think makes us look like fucking idiots, which I understand. So I was in England when this series came out. So it came out in 2013. As I said, it's on YouTube. Just search Better Man series. I didn't know why it was called Better Man until the end. So I won't tell you that why it was called that. Or it's on Stan streaming. But I was finishing high school when Van was executed in 2005. And I remember him being arrested as well when I was, you know, probably in year 9 or something like that. Van was from Melbourne, so we had a lot in common. And the more I read about Van, the more I realised, sadly, we had more than the city of Melbourne in common. Van was young and in his mind desperate, although if he had talked to someone and sought help, he probably would have been able to find an answer for his debt and his problems. I think in his mind, which I and probably a lot of you do, the more you think about it without telling anybody your problem, the more it kind of magnifies in your mind and becomes a bigger problem than what it is. He was also dumb, young, and a young man. And I'm not making excuses for him because, as many of you will know, I have siblings who are drug addicts. I have very little sympathy for drug addicts. So if you want me to say that I'm sympathetic and that it's a mental condition, I'm not going to say that. I'm sorry. And a lot of people who seem to think that don't have people immediately close to them who have pretty much ripped their families apart. So I have that in common with Van as we get into his story. He made a terrible decision that cost him his life. And I'm sure from the minute he was arrested, he regretted that. And I'm sure in his final moments, he regretted it too. I also don't have any sympathy for drug smugglers. So I'm sorry if you don't want to listen to this, where I'm pretty much like in the Kevin and Brian episode going, well, that's what happens because that's what they did. But 55% of Australians, which I'm probably one of them, agreed with the death penalty for Van being carried out at the time. And I don't make excuses for how old you are or your gender or, you know, how desperate you are. I've been in a very similar position to Van and never once did it cross my mind to traffic drugs through Singapore. So let's get into the story of Van Thuong Nguyen. Van Thuong Nguyen was born on August 17th, 1980, and I said he was Vietnamese-Australian, but he was actually born in a Thai refugee camp to a Vietnamese mother. I'm not saying he was born to Vietnamese parents because his dad was not even around. Basically, his mother had left while she was pregnant with the twins and fled a really bad marriage and ended up in a Vietnamese refugee camp. And I have a huge amount of respect for Van's mother and will throughout these two-part episodes. So he had a twin brother, and this is one of the reasons why I'm glad I watched the show, because if I hadn't and hadn't heard them say it, I would say his name was Koa, but it's actually pronounced Kwa. So it's spelled K-H-O-A, but it's pronounced Kwa, and he's a central figure in this story as well. He was actually born Dang Kwa Nguyen. Now, I think when you get baptized, you get to choose like a name that's, you know, given to you. And he was baptized Caleb, but he went by Van. So I will be referring to him as Van because everyone called him that. Now, according to The Age, Kim, who is Van and Kwa's mum, wasn't sure if Van or Kwa was born first because she had a cesarean and I think she was a bit out of it. So she allocated the one that was the oldest to Van, even though she wasn't sure. Now, the oldest male in a family in Southeast Asian or Asian families, or even, you know, Middle East or European families, but particularly in Vietnamese families, is a big responsibility. They basically are tasked with looking after their family, taking care of their parents as they get older, in this case, their mum Kim, and their siblings. So Van was given the title of oldest brother, even though they may not be sure it was him. So he took this very seriously throughout his life, and ultimately it was one of the reasons why he ended up doing what he did. His father would end up being in the United States. He also left Vietnam, and he was not present in Van or Kwa's life, which maybe contributed to why Kwa ended up the way he did, because it is a statistic and a fact. I'm sorry to tell you this, that fatherless families and households generally end up with more kids statistically who are drug addicts. And in Van's case, this is true. And in my family's case, this is true because there's nobody to belt them around a bit and be a father figure. And not everyone's mum can step up to that like mine, no matter how much they try. In fact, Van would not meet his father until his father visited Australia out of the blue in, I think, 2001 or early 2002, which would have come as a major shock to Van. And in the series, they do depict this in a flashback. And the guy who plays Van is really angry because he just comes home one day and his father's sitting on his couch and the mum has asked him for help, you know, handling Kwa, the twin brother, and his problems, which I'll get into. Similar thing that happened in my family as well, but it's a bit hard when your father has never lived with you. His mother, Kim, would go on to be an incredibly important figure in his life, and their relationship is basically a central focus of the series. And it is Kim who I have the most sympathy for in this entire story, and I think she's a strong and wonderful woman. Kim's life was not easy. Basically, when the Vietnamese army, after the Americans left at the end of the Vietnam War in April 1975, the North Vietnamese army came down to Saigon, which is now Ho Chi Minh City, which I have been to. I've been to a lot of places that are referenced in this, every single one, actually. And they were looking for her father, who was basically like a central figure in fighting them. And basically, they were rounding up people who had worked with Americans, which Kim's father had. Her father was sent to jail for quote-unquote treachery, and other family members were sent into re-education camps. So Kim ultimately was in a fucked marriage, and her family was all in jail, and she was leaving. I'm going to call it Ho Chi Minh City throughout this because it's now called that, but at the time it was called Saigon. So Kim, young and probably incredibly scared, pregnant with twins, Van and Kwa, ended up fleeing Saigon, which was the best option for her. She ended up in a raft that ultimately washed up on the coast of Thailand. And after many months, she ended up being allocated into a refugee camp. Through that, she ended up ultimately, when the little boys were quite young, ending up in Australia. So the boys are very Australian. They have very strong Australian accents. Now, the two little babies, Kwa and Van, both survived dysentery and a number of other illnesses in this refugee camp, which is from overcrowding and poor sanitation and things like that. But I found a photo of these two little boys and it almost brought tears to my eyes. They are so fucking cute and beautiful. I will put it up in Patreon, but you would never know from looking at that picture of Van and Kwa how their lives would ultimately, you know, be ripped apart. They were just so cute. In 1987, the year your host was born, Kim married a Vietnamese Australian while they were in Australia. The boys were only about 7 at the time, and he was incredibly violent and often turned his violence on Kim and the boys, which is true, and it's also depicted in the series very briefly. Kim ended up leaving him after he turned violent on the boys, so she always puts her boys first, and she, her whole life did until, you know, until now. Now, they bought a plain brick house in the suburb of Chadstone in Melbourne. Now, this is where it becomes very close to home physically for me, because Chadstone is about a 2-minute drive. I'm literally like 2 suburbs up a main road from Chadstone, and there's a really big shopping centre there. So Van was ultimately educated at St. Ignatius School in Richmond, which is not far from me either. It's an inner city suburb. He went to St. Joseph's Primary School in Springvale, which is not very far from me either. And I used to go there when I was growing up to go shopping and things. It's got it is mostly a Vietnamese Australian community there. And he also went to Mount Waverley Secondary School. And I used to live in Mount Waverley. Now, the twins were inseparable their entire lives. They were basically inseparable up until the point that Van went to prison in Singapore. And they told each other everything. But the way that they went in their lives, it's very much like me and my brother, who have just over a 1-year difference between us. It's funny how you can be so close, but one can choose one option and the other can choose the other. And that's why I understand this. So The Age talks about how Van was very mature. He took that oldest male in the family seriously because of a lack of a father figure in the house. He loved karaoke and he was the first in his group to get a driver's license. So he became what Australians refer to as the desi, which is the designated driver. So he couldn't drink while all his mates went out and had fun. He had so many friends, mostly actually girls, it seems, and two of them are depicted in the series, but only one of them exists in real life. It makes out like he has a girlfriend in the series, but he actually didn't. So the girl who is the Asian friend of his in the series, Kelly, she did exist, and their story in the series is pretty much spot on what's true. She said she was a square at their school in Mount Waverley, and she said that she would start to kind of talk to Van, and she considered him like one of the cool kids at school. But then they became friends, and he was a good friend to her up until the end, and she was a good friend to him. She said, quote, "The side that I saw at his home was how he helped Kim out. It just seems accepted that most teenagers didn't profess their love for their parents as openly as Van did," unquote. So basically to supplement the family's income, because Kim wasn't bringing in a whole lot of money, I don't know what she did for a living, Van worked at McDonald's, which a lot of high school kids do, and he would work quite late into the night. So he would turn up at school quite tired, and Kim wasn't very happy with this, but Van took his responsibilities very seriously. In 1999, Van started his own computer sales business. This did not last very long. I don't think that Van took into consideration the fact that people were doing stuff online now. They weren't going to like physical shops starting around the early 2000s. And there was other competition and the outgoings of the business and things like that. So after that business closed, he found a sales research and marketing job, and he was only earning between about $1,500 and $2,500 a month, which I think you could probably live on back then, but it's pretty hard now. And then plus commission. Now, it's really strange because I think it's the Herald Sun. They say, and also I just want to say that one of the sources for this was the Singapore Supreme Court's judgment against Van. And this is also referenced in that. It basically says that between June and December 2002, basically the year that he ended up going to Singapore in 2002, December, and getting caught, he had taken long service leave from work or something like that. And in his confession to the Singapore authorities, he stated that he was, quote, on medication for acne that required 4 months leave, unquote. Now, I know that a lot of acne medications can be really affecting on you, but I actually, that's one part of the story that even in his confession, I actually don't believe. Basically, he got caught and left Australia in December 2002. And basically for 6 months before that, he had taken long service leave. And I don't know if that's because he was like doing odd jobs for like drug dealers and things. I guess he didn't want to stack the cards against him even more by confessing to that. So his brother, Kwa, ended up being the more troubled one, basically from the time they were in school. He ended up getting into drugs and legal trouble, and he really wasn't as focused as Van, but then Van became really unfocused as well. Van didn't do drugs, he didn't have a criminal record, but he ended up taking on a lot of Kwa's problems as his own. Van had his own debt, which I think at probably his age, like 2021, would have been pretty big. I don't know what it was from, but maybe the business that he started, but the debt was around $25,000. And his brother was in legal trouble. And it was his brother's legal fees as well, which I believe were about $12,000 to pay his solicitor. These legal fees were basically to pay for his representation for drug trafficking, and he was also arrested for attacking a young man with a katana, which is pretty much like a samurai sword, and he pretty much almost killed the guy, and he ultimately did get off, but he ended up getting quite a good solicitor. Through all this, Van was trying to make money to pay off these legal fees. And this is where the way that Van and I operate with our families differ. My brother has been an addict for a long time. I also have a younger brother. And I can understand Van probably never turning to that because you've seen how it affects the family. And basically at the root of all of these problems have been both my brother's addictions, although growing up, my older brother was like a nutter as well, and probably had sociopathic tendencies, which most of them do, which is why I don't visit them or have much to do with them. Can you believe it? And I don't want it to appear like I have problems as well, which I don't. I don't like their reputations rubbing off on me. But the way that Van operated around this time, which would have been around the time my older brother's problem started, was basically he was trying to help his brother and pay off his debts, whereas my approach was do the time, do the crime, do the time, and I'm not fucking helping you. And I'm not going to be judged for operating that way, because basically it has continued and our family has one by one stopped helping my older brother with anything because he is a drug addict who is constantly asking people for free stuff instead of doing it himself. And he will not get ahead in his life. And you can't make excuses for someone at 35 who's doing that. So he has to get on his own two feet at this point. So Van, the way that he approached it is not how I did. And I don't have any kind of regret for that. And, you know, maybe he did in the end. Ultimately, he should have just let Qua sort his own shit out at this point in time. He's an adult now. He's a big boy and he has to take responsibility for his actions, including attacking a young man with a katana. So Qua's solicitor, his name was Brett Ryan, he said that he remembers Van through representing Qua, and he said Van was a, quote, pleasant, nice young man. But after his arrest, his brother's arrest, he underwent, quote, an enormous personal change, unquote. So Van really changed as a person. And I think he stopped looking at what was happening with his life and started trying to help his brother instead of looking at trying to fix his life. And I think that's one of his first problems. In 2002, Van turned 22 and he was desperate. On top of all of these problems, including his brother's debt, he is debt, getting jobs that didn't pay a whole lot, and according to most people, really trying to find a job that paid a lot more. But the series pretty much makes it look like he didn't try all that much. He could have worked three jobs if he wanted to pay this off, as one of the guys who arrests him and questions him in Singapore says in the series. But I think he didn't, and that's really his problem. But he was desperate. Ultimately, Qua was addicted to heroin, which my brother was, probably not anymore, who fucking knows. Ultimately, it is a very small sum to traffic drugs for, like less than $50,000. Van could have got help. There are companies that can help you and put you on a payment plan that is more manageable. He was kind of just paying off his interest on these loans. But the thing is, he could have claimed bankruptcy if it was the biggest thing. It sounds terrible, but it's not the end of the world. Like, there are options. But I think Van was panicked. He was young. He wasn't thinking very clearly about this. And I do think by the time he got over there, he realized his mistake. But by that point, he couldn't back out because he knew that the people that he was involved with would probably kill his family if he did. I think probably the whole shame aspect of the Vietnamese community, which is represented really well in the series, was something he was fearful of. These people who get refugee status and get asylum in Australia really want to infiltrate into Australian society normally because they're so grateful for coming in. And I think they started distancing themselves once this happened from Van's family because it's bringing shame on the entire Vietnamese Australian community. I also just want to say that if you've watched the series, a lot of people complained that the guy who played Van doesn't look anything like Van. And it is kind of crazy because he's the complete opposite of Van. Apparently the actor, the producers couldn't find an actor that was as good. But it is quite off-putting when you see an actual picture of Van versus the guy who played him. The guy who played his brother in the series actually looks more like Van than the guy who played him. But I think it was just because he was such a good actor. So Van was kind of quite short and chubby and had quite a chubby kind of baby face. The guy who played him was like tall and lanky and just looked completely different. The actor who played him like isn't even from Singapore. So in November 2002, this was the lead up to Van going off and trafficking drugs into Singapore. He met a man called Tan in the food court of a place I know really well called Box Hill Central Mall. And this guy pretty much had organized him to travel to Sydney to meet a Vietnamese man named Sun. The series very much focuses on this Sun guy, but you never actually find out in the series who he was. And I think they haven't caught like a lot of the bigwigs in this story. So this guy called Tan is represented in the series as basically a guy you don't want to cross. You don't want to fuck with him. And he will basically like fuck your life up and kill your whole family if you back out. So Sun basically said to Van once he went up to Sydney to meet him that he would repay all of Van's loans if Van agreed to traffic packages of heroin from Cambodia back to Melbourne, which is another Southeast Asian country kind of above Singapore. So via Singapore, it was going to be a transit flight, which I will get into. So the man basically said that the packages contained quote unquote white, which Van couldn't say that he didn't know what white meant because he did understand it to mean heroin and he did know what he was doing. So there was people on the Cambodian side and there were people on the Sydney and Melbourne side basically trafficking these, and they need drug mules to go and get them and traffic them. Van had never left Australia since they immigrated from the refugee camp in Thailand when he was a baby. So this was his first trip to Southeast Asia. And my first trip outside of Australia was also to Singapore. Without his family knowing, he flew to Southeast Asia. He told his mum that he was going on a trip because he needed a holiday, which is as far from the truth as possible. And kind of that mother's intuition, Kim very quickly thought it was very strange. It was a very sudden trip. There was not much planning. Van had never had much interest in going to these countries, and suddenly he was off. Also in the series, which is pretty much depicted, Van did not even know an exact dollar figure that he was going to get paid. He hadn't even locked that in. They had basically said that the guy would just pay off his debts, and there was never any kind of verbal or written agreement of what Van was getting paid. So things were not like very organized, and Van hadn't got that, you know, in writing. I also just want to clarify before I get into Van's journey to Cambodia that at no point did Kwa know that Van was doing this, nor did he ask him to do this. He had no connections to these people who were basically setting Van up. And at no point have I been able to find how Van connected with these people. I mean, it's probably not that hard. I think at one point Melbourne was the drug capital of Australia. But yeah, I just want to clarify that Kim and Kwa did not know any of this. On the 3rd of December at midday 2002, Van touched down in a city that I have been to, Phnom Penh, which is the capital of Cambodia, Phnom Penh. Phnom Penh is perhaps not the most favourite Cambodian city of people who visit there. It's quite confronting. I have some stories from there, but people do go there to visit the killing fields, which is probably the most confronting place you can visit. It's basically a museum out in the open that's a nod to what Pol Pot, the dictator, who I haven't done Cambodia yet because I'm just not ready to do it, how he pretty much created a genocide against his people. It's very confronting. Van at no point would have visited the killing fields or anything like that, although maybe he did because he did have some spare time in Phnom Penh. But if you're going there, one of the best other places that you can go is a place called Chul Slang Prison. And I have quite a lot of photos that I took at these places. This is where Pol Pot imprisoned his political opponents. Sounds like Putin. So I will put up my own pictures of these places because Cambodia doesn't do a European kind of style museum. They leave the shit and the blood smeared on the walls for you to basically feel like you're back there and to know what it was like. And I've got, yeah, quite a few photos, but I was really not trying to take photos because when you go to the killing fields, there's skulls everywhere. And when I do Cambodia eventually, I'll talk about how when you enter the killing fields, because it's a massive like property, big fields, you basically, there's signs that say if a body part does come up, please notify someone who works here. So basically, during the wet season, the ground spits up bones that belong to people who were killed by Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge regime in the 70s. Because we're not doing Cambodia for this episode, we're doing Singapore. I'm not going to do too much and talk too much about it, but Cambodian history is one of my favourite topics to read about, to talk about, and I've got quite a few books if you guys want recommendations. So Van had to fly in on the 3rd, but then a lot of the time he was there, he was basically just killing time until he met with the contacts that Sun had set him up with in the city. So on the 4th of December, the day after he flew in, he met with his contact he'd been set up with in Phnom Penh. They met up at a fast food chain, I think it is, called Lucky Burger. I looked it up. It opens at 9 o'clock tomorrow if you're interested. But this is where they would meet up repeatedly. And the series, one of the best things about it is it's filmed at all of these places. So it took me right back to the heat and the busyness and the claustrophobia of these cities. And when it went to Vietnam, it reminded me of my visit there because I have been to all the places that it kind of showed, including the Ben Thanh Market, which is their massive city market. So he was basically told to swap money with this guy, and then he had to stay in Cambodia and wait until the 10th of December, at which point he was to fly out via Singapore back to Melbourne to traffic these drugs. So it didn't look too weird if he flew in for one day and flew out, because that would be, you know, an alarm bell for customs. On the 8th of December, Van flew to Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, which I think is about an hour's flight away. This is really weird because basically he only went for like one day. His version of events in his confession, which I've read and you can read, is basically that he got scared and he flew to Vietnam for a day to go somewhere different. I don't actually think this is the case. According to the series, he fled and turned off his phone, and I think this is probably closer to the truth. I think Van felt the heat, got really scared. The guy who plays him shows how terrifying and terrified he was the whole time. I actually think that the series is actually closer to the truth, that he flew to Vietnam, although in the series it says he got a bus. That's actually a trip I've taken on that very bus. He was in Vietnam and then he kind of was like, I have to go back or they'll kill my whole family, which they'd been threatening to do. Many believe he was fleeing. That's what the series says. Some people think that he was just going for a day, but I think that's a very strange thing to do for a man who was yet to be paid for this and was in so much debt. Adding more trips and more money to this would be weird. But ultimately something caused Van to return to Phnom Penh, Cambodia. Now, Van says that over the several days that he was in Phnom Penh, after meeting this contact in this Lucky Burger restaurant, he was then taken a number of times, each time he met him, to this garage by this Vietnamese man who had forced him to smoke heroin. And I think this is probably like a test to see if he's not a narc or something like that. But Van, in his confession, says that this man said to him, fuck your mother, smoke or die, unquote. So Van's being forced to smoke heroin and do this. And they basically told him, like, if he fled, he would kill his mum and his brother back in Melbourne. And this is probably true because there were contacts on both sides. So I can see why Van kind of went through with it, because he cared for his family so much. I don't know if I would. So on the 10th of December, he was back in Phnom Penh and he missed the first meeting where he was meant to meet the guy. The guy got really cut. And on the 11th, he was taken to this garage again. They decided to allow him to do this job for them. And this is where he was given two heroin bricks, which actually in the series, it looks tiny. It's this perfect amount. It's like less than half a kilo of heroin. It just looks so small. But then that's a fucking shitload of heroin. And he was instructed, he was given a blender, according to the series. He was shown how to crush these bricks of heroin, which I did not know you had to do, nor I'm pretty glad I didn't know to do that. And then they were told, he was told by these contacts to use this tape. They gave him everything that he needed to tape the packages to his body and basically body pack, which is so dumb. I was thinking while I was watching it, because they always like end up patting you down. Like, I've always been patted down in an airport. I always seem to attract their attention. They think I'm like dodgy or something. And you would always be caught. Like, it makes more sense to swallow it. And then I was kind of thinking, how would I do it? And then I came up with an idea, but I'm not going to talk about that because I'm not going to do it. The rest of the day, he went back to his hotel and he was crushing and packing and blending these bricks of heroin and kind of starting to really freak out at the magnitude of what he was doing. He then checked out of the hotel the following morning and he headed to Phnom Penh Airport. Now, most flights are not direct to Phnom Penh from Melbourne. I know this because I've flown it, and I also know because I used to work in a travel agency back when they were a thing. So he had to pass through Singapore, and I presume that Van probably knew this because he would have had a transit on the way to Phnom Penh anyway. The series makes out like it was a shock to him. I really don't think so. I think he knew what he was doing. But the terrifying thing is that Cambodia doesn't have the death penalty, although their prisons are really fucked. And Melbourne, Australia in general, we do not have the death penalty. So where he was transiting through without leaving the airport was where the death penalty was. So if he had got a flight, not that it's possible, to Melbourne that didn't transit through somewhere, he would have been better off. But even if he had like one that transferred through Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, they still have the death penalty as well. But it is a mandatory death penalty over a certain amount for anyone trafficking that certain amount, even through transit in Singapore. Just because you're not entering Singapore and it's not going to their population doesn't mean that you can't get charged because you're transiting through the airport with it, which is something that I think a lot of people like don't understand. So Van touched down at Singapore's famous Changi Airport, and long story short, he waited the 4-hour stopover in the airport before his transit flight, connecting flight to Melbourne. Upon boarding his connecting flight to Melbourne, as he was walking through the security part where you walk through the metal detector and put your bag in a little basket and it goes through the thing, Van had, you know, pretty much half a kilo of heroin taped to his body, and he taped it around the base of his back really tightly. And the series shows this, but also in his confession, he says that at one point, I think on the flight from Phnom Penh to Singapore, he had to like take it off because it was pretty much like suffocating him how tight it was. So he had that. And then the other one was kind of like on his shoulder blade. It was weird, like he had kind of taped it not to his stomach but to his shoulder blade, maybe thinking that it would pass off as like he was built or something like that. It was a really strange place to put it, but that is true, and also it's in the series as well. So the metal detector went off, which is always the case. It was his belt that was setting it off when he was passing through it. But then you're suddenly in the crosshairs of that person who ultimately ends up patting you down. And I always get so scared when they start patting me down, despite the fact that I know that nothing's on me. My glasses always set up the metal detector as well. And then they always end up patting me down because of it. The last time I went to Thailand, though, it didn't go off once, but I have a really scary story flying out of London Heathrow, what happened to me, and I hadn't done anything wrong, but ultimately, like, all this security had to come and talk to me. So Van ultimately gets stopped. The woman passes that metal detector kind of rod over him, different spots, doesn't go off, you know, and then just as he's walking away and she's, you know, kind of stepped away, she calls him back and she says, "Excuse me, sir, I need to pat you down," you know, just as standard procedure. And Van says that in his confession that that is exactly when he knew he was fucked. Like, it all came to him. He knew how much he had on him. He knew the death penalty, and he was going to get that because it's a mandatory death penalty over a certain amount. Van had trafficked 27 times the amount of heroin that mandates a death penalty by hanging in Singapore. So this is where we're going to talk about Singapore. And weirdly, Singapore was actually the first place I set foot on overseas territory outside of Australia when I was about 14 years old. My dad took me and my brother on this Asian trip. It was really weird because Dad was never interested in Asia. And I think like we'd had a shit year, like my grandfather had died and stuff. And ultimately he had this girlfriend who'd just come back from this trip. So we had the identical itinerary, like that, because he saw all the photos and wanted to do it. So we went to Singapore for about 4 days, and we went to Indonesia, this island called Bintan. And then we went up to Hong Kong, where I got really sick. And then we flew back to Melbourne. And I think it was about 17 days we went for. Now, when we were in Singapore, I remember when we were on the plane, my dad telling us to be on our best behavior and basically don't fuck around while we're in Singapore and be fucking idiots, because they're very strict. They have very strict laws and they take a lot of pride in their country. And That is extremely true. We had a good stay there. We stayed in a beautiful hotel, which is one of the city's best. So thanks, Dad. They had a rooftop pool. We went shopping on Orchard Road, had really good food. And then we went to Sentosa Island one day as well, which is kind of like a theme park island, which is connected to Singapore. So it's a country that I know really well. And it's also a country that I've written a lot about as a travel writer. So I feel like I know it very well because it's a very small place. So it is located 7 hours flight from Melbourne, kind of at the base of Southeast Asia above Indonesia. And it's the largest port in Southeast Asia. Singapore is really tiny if you look at it on a map, so much so it is called Singapore and the capital is Singapore. There is no kind of differentiation. Many people head here as part of their backpacking trips, and a lot of my friends have done that and then very quickly left because they realized that it is incredibly expensive. If you're going here thinking you're having a budget trip, think again. It is probably like 100 times the price of, you know, Thailand or Bangkok, Vietnam, Cambodia. If you're on a budget, don't go to Singapore. And also, honestly, there's not a whole lot to do in Singapore. The most expensive country in Southeast Asia and one of the most expensive in the world. And it's expensive for a reason. Singaporeans, as I found out researching this, which I didn't know, it's actually a tax haven. And Singaporeans take a lot of pride in their country. And I think they're kind of deterring people from going here, like by making the prices really high. There is no rubbish anywhere. You cannot chew gum. Gum is not sold in Singapore. And if you take gum into the country, that can land you with a hefty prison sentence. There is no gum stuck anywhere. There is no rubbish anywhere. It is this tropical garden paradise. I think it's called the garden country or something, where everything is like tropical trees and plants. It's incredible. It's this leafy, beautiful country. And even the airport Changi, where Van just got caught, is regularly voted the most beautiful and incredible airline in the world. It's, if anyone's been to Changi or through Changi, which I'm sure a lot of you have, there's plants and gardens everywhere. It's just beautiful. And it's a beautiful place to have a stopover. It's, time flies there. Singapore Airlines is also one of the best in the world. Now, over the last year, Singapore has been voted the most resistant country to a pandemic. You wouldn't even know that it was happening there. Life has gone along as usual. It also has the second largest population density in the world, 5.7 million citizens over a tiny, tiny, tiny span of country. And I don't have the exact one here, but I know that it's the same amount of citizens that my city, Melbourne, has, but it's like probably like one fifth of the size of Melbourne. Everything Singapore does is on par kind of with Dubai. It's big, modern, amazing, breathtaking. For instance, the hotel, the Marina Bay Sands, I think is one of the most luxurious hotels in the world. And you'd probably know it if you saw it because it's incredible. The architecture and everything like that, they kind of almost with that took on Dubai and that weird sail-shaped one. I can't think of what its name is. It has one of the highest levels of development and highest qualities of life in the world. And it, as a result of how much business it does and its port location, it has the second highest GDP in the world. Also, the fact that it's a tax haven draws a lot of people in. Singaporeans are classified as the most intelligent people in the world, the most highly educated. It has the best healthcare system in the world, and it has the highest level of home ownership in the world. 91% of Singaporeans own their home, and their wages are really high as well. And I know quite a lot of expats from the UK or Europe or the US or Australia have moved there. Singaporean is actually a language. The official language is Malay. Then There are four official languages. It's Malay, English, Chinese, and Tamil. So as a result of that, you can probably tell that it is one of the most multicultural cities in the world. And I think one of the things that the series Better Man got right is that it shows that through its different cast members. For instance, the police officer who questions Van, even though everyone's speaking in Australian accent and, you know, they're Australian for the sake of the show. He is Indian, clearly. And then, you know, they've got English people or Australians in it who live there. And then they've got, you know, Chinese, you know, cast members. And then they've got Malay cast members, Singaporean cast members. Many expats, as I said, move here for the high wages and the many kind of opportunities because the country is constantly growing. It is run by a prime minister and a president, which will come into play in Van's case. Although the president, as will come into play, is just a figurehead, which we've talked about a lot with previous cases. The president is just there. They don't really do anything. They don't really have any power, but it's just kind of the way it is. Singapore was founded in 1819 by a man named Sir Stamford Raffles as part of the British Empire, a trading post. Now, if you've been to Singapore, and I have a picture outside this building, you know when you travel with your parents when you're young and they try to get you interested in like buildings and things by telling you the history and you're just like, oh, fuck. And then they get really mad at you because you're not interested. My dad was that person. He made me and my brother take a photo outside the Raffles Hotel, which is named after Sir Stamford Raffles. And we were complaining the whole time and he got really pissed at us. He said, this is an important building. So 20 years later, I am sitting here recording this episode. So I am sorry, Dad. The tropical climate must have come as a real shock to the British Empire, who kind of founded modern day Singapore because it is so hot. I remember even as an Australian, we have like a dry heat landing there, just being kind of overcome by it. Singapore during the Second World War was occupied by Japan, which will be something that I think on part two I will get into, because it's here that its ties to Australia became very strong, and Australia has very close cultural ties with Singapore. And when we get into this case, you will kind of understand how Australia, it's not really, I don't know how not to offend someone who thinks that a government should intervene to help one person. You can understand when I get into this why Australia would not intervene for the sake of one person too much or put sanctions on Singapore or anything like that, because we have such a historical close bond, especially with Australians being kept in Changi Prison during the Second World War. Singapore gained independence in 1959, and by 1963 it was part of the new Federation of Malaysia, hence the official language, or one of them, being Malay. So as we get deeper into Van's story, I will discuss how Singapore became so linked to Australia and maybe why Australians weren't particularly interested in the plight of Van and why 55% of them agreed with his death penalty. You would think that we would all, you know, we would all kind of be jumping on the bandwagon to save him. But if you I'm trying to do more Australians like locked up abroad on episodes so you understand why most of us just have lost interest in trying to help them. To illustrate how much Singapore takes their countries and rules seriously, I've written down a few examples of laws that you wouldn't even think would be laws anywhere, but they are in Singapore. So smoking is pretty much forbidden across Singapore. So I'm very glad I went before I smoked, because I don't think my dad would have paid to get me out of prison as a 14-year-old smoker. So smoking is basically forbidden everywhere in Singapore, and you can be fined up to from $150 to $1,000 if you found smoking. And it's because there's no rubbish anywhere. They don't want cigarette butts everywhere. Suicide is illegal, which is listed on many of their laws. But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that suicide is actually illegal in most countries. But because you're dead, they can't fine you or put you in jail. Singapore is anti-LGBT. It's not a destination to go if you're a gay couple. You can get 2 years in prison. As I said, chewing gum is one of their biggest kind of things that they stomped out. You can get a $100,000 fine or 2 years in prison for chewing gum. Noise is taken very seriously. You cannot sing in public, busk, or make noise after 10 p.m. And if you do, you'll get a fine of up to $2,000. Connecting to someone else's Wi-Fi will get you either a $10,000 fine or up to 3 years in prison. So privacy is taken very seriously. Graffitiing will actually get you caned, because that's still a punishment in Singapore, like it is in a number of different places in Indonesia and surrounding areas, because there's a little province in Indonesia that still canes people for tiny little things. And it's fucked. I saw it in the news recently. If you don't flush a public toilet, because police regularly go into them and double check and catch people, you can be fined up to $500. And feeding pigeons will also get you a hefty fine as well, because they don't want them in the city. And of course, drug possession or trafficking of drugs Anything classified over 27 grams, I believe, is a mandatory death penalty. Anything under that is considered possession. Possession will get you up to 10 years in prison for a small amount. Anything over that will automatically give you the death penalty. And really, you are not going to get out of that death penalty on appeal. No one has ever, I don't think, on death row in Singapore. You can only hope for clemency from the president, who has very little clout in Singapore. It's hard to say you didn't know this stuff. Anyone who has set foot in Southeast Asian airport anywhere will have seen signs saying that the death penalty, they have a death penalty for drug traffickers, Thailand, Vietnam. Most of these countries that have a death penalty, it says warning, death penalty for drug traffickers. You can't say you didn't know. Most of the world knows that these countries have like a zero tolerance policy. Van would have known that. He maybe would have known about Kevin Barlow and Brian Chambers, who have covered on a previous double-parter episode. He would have known that they were hung for it. I believe he knew that Singapore had the death penalty because he knew pretty much immediately as soon as he was caught, it was over. And unfortunately, Van was caught in December 2002, and this did not deter other Australians from trying it. So most Australians will be familiar with 2004 being a big year for Australians being caught and sentenced to death and lengthy periods for drug trafficking in this part of the world. I think it was April 2004, Chappelle Corby, who's a very, it's unfortunate, but she's a famous name in Australia and was recently on our version of Dancing with the Stars. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. It's a very famous case for trafficking marijuana into Indonesia. Anyone who says she didn't do it and believes her bullshit lies is a fucking idiot and has one brain cell. Then there was Michelle Leslie, who was caught with, I believe, ecstasy at a dance party in Indonesia. She pretty much immediately converted to Islam, according to what her lawyer told her to do, and they let her out, so she had the right idea. And then maybe the most famous case later that year in 2004 was the Bali Nine being arrested. One day I will cover their story. It's just a big one. Nine Australians were caught in Denpasar Airport, Bali, flying out with heroin strapped to them. One, who was a woman, the only woman in the group, was sentenced to 20 years, but she didn't serve that whole time. She's actually, a couple of years ago, returned to Australia. The youngest in the group, Scott Rush, was sentenced to death. It was then, I don't know where it stands at the moment, but two of them have been executed so far, and they were considered the ringleaders. So one day I will cover their case, but pretty much from 2000 to 2005, it was non-stop Australians being done in Southeast Asia for drugs. And you can kind of understand why Australians just stopped caring, because we firmly believe most of them did it on purpose. I mean, the one who says that they didn't was Chappelle Corby, and everybody knows that. People have known this for years. Since like the beginning of modern Asia, there's always been a zero tolerance policy. For instance, in the Philippines, most people know that the president pretty much allows free rein for regular citizens to kill drug dealers because he wants them gone. And when you see kind of the effects of heroin or these class A drugs, and you see the statistics in a place like the Philippines of people who are hooked on drugs, you can understand why Duterte is doing that. So that's where I'm going to leave it for part one. Van has been arrested and pretty much taken into custody in jail in Singapore. And pretty much from the first day they were telling him he would hang. So we will be back in a day or so with his trial, his Australian team trying to try different avenues to get him off. Some of them seemed very legitimate, his death and kind of where it stands now. So I will see you then. And thanks, Tegan, for recommending this.